this huge dynamic shift when you go from being a kid into adulthood, right? Everybody talks about how, oh, what's your favorite season? Maybe not what's your favorite season, but you get that asked that question a lot. I remember as a kid that always summer was my favorite season, just because like you get off school, you get to do whatever you want. That's fine. As an adult, I feel like summer might be my least favorite, just because it's so hot and you still got to go to work. You got to do all these different things. The fall is the premier time of year as an adult. Like the weather gets a little bit colder, you know, you kind of settle into your schedule a little bit more. But then as this is a sports podcast, everybody talks about how October is the best sports month. You get all four of the major sports on your TV at once, and there's an opportunity for the sports solstice. NFL football game, MLB baseball game, NBA, and then hockey. Hockey huge, starting off in the beginning of the month. But like, it's, I guess it's just like a weird dynamic, because like we've already had all of the sports stuff when we were kids, but then when we're adults, like it's still there. We just get to appreciate it more. I don't know, dude, guys, getting old sucks. Really, it does. It's the worst thing in the world. But at least you get to appreciate some nice sporting events on the way there. And that's what keeps you going. So if you haven't already, dive into the MLB playoffs. They're quite exciting. The Evil Empire might be getting the World Series matchup, and baseball might get the way that they want for the first time in forever with it appears to be a Yankees-Dodgers World Series. That's kind of exciting, even if you hate both of those teams, because you get those huge markets. You know, NHL is kicking off again. Their popularity is continuing to grow. They're doing a really good job with their marketing, I believe. And then, of course, the big dogs, the NFL and the NBA, are going to get their season kicked off. But as all of you know, this is a college football podcast, and specifically a Big Ten football podcast. So if you love Big Ten football, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Big Banter. My name is Corey, and I am riding solo for the first time in the history of this podcast. Alex has done it a few times. He does an excellent job each of those times. And now it is my turn, because we all have very busy and different schedules to go. But as always, subscribe to on our socials, wherever you listen to us, rate us 5 stars, because we love doing this and it's a ton of fun, and we do it for you, the listener. You give us an avenue to talk crazy about college football, and that's pretty neat, and we love and appreciate it. That's why we keep churning out these episodes. So without further ado, let's get this episode going. And I don't know about you guys, but this week was like dubbed like one of the best weeks of college football that we're gonna have this season. And I'm gonna be pretty honest, most of it was like a dud, or at least the first half, because what, Red River Rivalry, that's always a really good game, but because Texas is so good, it wasn't. Oklahoma didn't even score a touchdown. I think the final score was 33-3, and it was just, I mean, it was out of reach the entire time. But because we don't believe in SEC propaganda, you know who had the best slate of college football games this week? It was the Big Ten Conference. Big Ten Conference was leading the way, and Michigan was on a bye week, so I don't think that's a coincidence at all, because they've been playing some horrendous football. Anyway, and we know, we understand, we're a little bit biased, but we'll call it as it is. Michigan's been bad, and other teams have been very good, and we're going to talk about it. So let's get to the games this week, and I don't think we can start with any game other than the big one, the top five matchup, Ohio State traveling to Oregon. And what a game this was, truly. Oregon comes out on top with a little bit of controversy. The dust has settled. The guys and I were talking about it this week, and then it turned into a national story, and then it eventually turned into a rule change. But before we get into that, let's talk about the game itself, because this was everything that you would want in a top five matchup, a back and forth affair, lead changes. You even had some mistakes that were uncharacteristic in the beginning of the game, and then you end with the absolute most just head-scratching ending of all time. But before we get into that, Ohio State gets the ball first in this game, and they drive down the field like nobody's business. I mean, that was an impressive drive. They could do whatever they wanted. And I'm sitting there thinking like, oh man, this is going to be a long day, an incredibly, incredibly long day. But Oregon answers back with a Jordan James 3-yard touchdown run with the 2-point conversion failing due to a botched snap. And guys, Oregon made a ton of mistakes in this game. So they get a botched snap to potentially tie the game in the first quarter. And then they have to go for two to eventually tie the game up when they respond to Ohio State's response with Quinshon Judkins and his first touchdown run of the game early in the second quarter. I was shocked, especially at home, how sloppy Oregon had played in this game, and they made some brutal mistakes. And on that first botched extra point, they almost gave up a return on that. I think Ohio State returned it, I think, past the 50. But luckily they minimized that mistake and kept it going. I mean, this is just a back and forth affair. The biggest takeaways from Oregon, they did not get letting punched in the mouth determine this for this game. I mean, they were explosive play after explosive play against this Ohio State defense, which had played pretty well for the majority of the game, but they did have a glaring weakness of giving up that big play really putting their cornerbacks on an island. Dylan Gabriel was able to exploit that, and he played like a Heisman Trophy candidate. You would not think that Dylan Gabriel was a mobile quarterback based off of the majority of the game that he played, but then he had an option play where it was like a 30-yard touchdown run or something like that late in the second half. It was 27 yards, excuse me. But like, I think that's what makes him so lethal, is because he can routinely beat you with his arm, and then in that back pocket when he needs it and when you need that spark plug to your offense, he can pull it out and do it. And I think that kept Ohio State off guard. And obviously when it happened, they were not prepared for it. But I mean, you guys watched the game. This was an incredible football game. You don't need any extra analysis from me. You watched it leaving, and even Alex said it perfectly on the Instagram Live. You watched this game leaving. Yeah, these are two of the best teams in the country. And this is most likely just an appetizer for the main course of a potential rematch in Indianapolis for the Big Ten Championship. I would like to see, and we would have to, you know, look at the tiebreaker situation once we get closer to that, to see if that is possible. If one of these teams slips up again in the Big Ten schedule, because Ohio State has to travel to Penn State and play, and then Oregon, I believe, has a couple other difficult matchups on their schedule. They play Purdue this week, which we'll talk about that later in the episode. They have Illinois at home, then they go travel to Michigan. Oregon should win these games. They should win these games, and they have a good chance to finish undefeated in the Big Ten, which is crazy for a first year into the conference. But I think we've said this from the very beginning, that Oregon's style of play transfers very well into the Big Ten, and they just beat the team that was the most challenging on their schedule. So Oregon's sitting pretty. Ohio State's path is a little bit murkier, but I think watching these teams play, you have the full confidence that Ohio State is going to get back there as well. Just a great game. I know I've already said that before. Just a couple of highlights. Dylan Gabriel is 23 of 34 for 341 yards and two touchdowns and one on the ground. Will Howard, similarly, was 28 and 35 with 326 yards and two touchdowns. Ohio State didn't run the ball all that well in this game, which is a concern for some of our other run-heavy teams in the conference. But Jeremiah Smith also had a big game, 9 receptions, 100 yards with a touchdown as well. And then Evan Stewart was electric in this game with 7 receptions and 149 yards and a touchdown. And Oregon State prevails in an incredible matchup. But the story at the end of this game was Dan Lanning being a mastermind, question mark. Will Howard not knowing what to do in a certain situation? I don't know, but this will come down, because it was a one-point victory, this will come down to the final 8 seconds of the game. The NCAA has now addressed a possible loophole that Oregon has confirmed to run with an intentional 12 men on the field penalty, in which Oregon gave up 5 yards and chews up clock to deal with. I believe there was 12 seconds left to go in the game. And Dan Lanning puts a 12th man on the field, according to him, 12th man on the field, to keep everything in front of him, and Ohio State throws an incompletion, but runs 5 seconds off the clock in the process. So I believe they were at their own 40, or they were on Oregon's 48-yard line, somewhere in that range, just a little bit out of field goal range. I think Ohio State needed to get to like the 35 to feel comfortable in this situation. But story goes, incompletion, 12 men on the field, you give up 5 yards, but then you only have 8 seconds left to go in the game. So you play zone coverage. You run the clock down. You force Will Howard to make a decision. Is he going to run for it? And he does. I don't want to say he was baited into it, but obviously good coverage. And if you're going to see a lane, you're going to take the lane. He runs. He slides. Game's over. Ohio State has a timeout, and they do not use it. Unfortunately, this is the story of the game for two teams that played really, really well. And everybody is looking at the genius of Dan Lanning and kind of scratching their heads of, okay, call the timeout. Call the timeout, or immediately, or get down, or have a communication. I mean, like, you're communicating with your quarterbacks in the helmets now. Tell them, hey, get down earlier so we can call timeout and try to go and kick this field goal, but that doesn't happen. And now Ohio State has a loss on their schedule, makes their path to the college football playoff just slightly a little bit more difficult. Not that concerning all that much at all, but because you've seen the game, these are two of the best teams in the country, but like, it's crazy that in a game of that stature, in the game of that magnitude, you don't have the situational awareness. And that's the takeaway. Ohio State could very easily be undefeated. It was a one-point loss, and a lot of people are saying, well, neutral field or in the horseshoe rematch, like Ohio State's got this in the bag. Sure, you can say that, but until that gets there, this is all hypothetical. One-point loss, and you have a timeout in your back pocket and a chance to potentially kick a game-winning field goal, and you don't use it. That's the story of the game. That's what it comes down to. And I feel like Ohio State has to be kicking themselves in the locker room. Not to tear the team apart, because they're still really good, but Ryan Day and the coaching staff, what are we doing here? What are we doing? Now you don't have a chance to be an undefeated national championship, or to win an undefeated national championship, and now you're left second-guessing coming out of Oregon. Man, we played well enough to beat that team, but we didn't. That's a tough, tough, tough pill to swallow. And maybe that's motivation, or maybe that's the beginning of something else. I'm not quite sure. But two of the best teams in the country, the two best teams in the conference, played on Saturday, and they gave us an instant classic. There's not much more else to say about that. But there was a second game that was on the West Coast with an East Coast, West Coast team, and that was Penn State at USC. This was an exciting game, 33-30 Penn State victory in overtime, where USC once was a top 10 team, has now fallen off a cliff and is 3-3, and Penn State continues their undefeated season at 6-0. Alex was pretty difficult on this game, just because James Franklin was getting in his own way again. And then Drew Allard was turning the ball over like crazy against USC, and USC was capitalizing on that as well. I believe the score at the end of half was like, it was 20-6. And it looked like Penn State wasn't going to do anything in the second half, but they solidified, they galvanized themselves. they got to the run game, although it wasn't especially although it wasn't spectacular. They were able to, you know, run the ball at least a little bit in the second half. Katron Allen with a score. But Drew Aller played well in the second half despite his three turnovers, with 390, almost 400 yards of passing, with two touchdowns and three interceptions. Guys, I don't want to say Penn State's for real because we keep seeing things that we have seen in the past of why Penn State hasn't been able to turn the corner. But this was an impressive win. I'm going to disagree with Alex here on the socials. This was an incredibly impressive win because at the time, you became only the second Big Ten team to travel cross country and leave with a road victory. It's been very difficult for the teams that have that were, I don't want to say charter members because there's 1,000 teams in the Big Ten, but teams who were originally in the Big Ten going and traveling to the West Coast, they've had a difficult time coming away with wins. And Penn State was able to do that. Ohio State wasn't able to do that, but that was a different circumstance and a different story. Penn State was able to do that. And I think that speaks to, you know, how good this team can be because USC can sling it. Miller Moss had also a pretty decent game as well. And Woody Marks was able to run the ball effectively as well with 111 yards on the ground. And it looked like USC was going to pull off the upset and send shockwaves into the college football world with the loss from Penn State. But here, the story of the game, Penn State's tight end balled out. Tyler Warren was a freak. And this guy, nobody was guarding him. I mean, I feel like he was open all game. And just watching him, this is a slow tight end. He had 17 receptions for 224 yards and a touchdown. You get a trick play. It's like almost like a flea flicker to your tight end. He makes a spectacular catch. But this was the story. He kept him in the game. Your security blanket. Everybody who plays any college football video game ever. Where's my tight end? You know? And it seems like this is what Penn State was doing. Where's my tight end? This guy was unreal and doing things that looking and watching the game, it's like, how did he get that open? How did he make that catch? How was he anywhere near the best player on the field at that time? But he was. He balled out and he bailed out Penn State in this game. So buy some stock and Tyler Warren, tight end stock. He's going to be a key piece to this Penn State offense. And when Drew Aller is kind of teetering on some bad decisions, he's going to go to security blanket. That's going to be a big piece, I think, moving forward. And if you're a Penn State fan, I think seeing that stat line should be encouraging because not only do you have some talented wide receivers, not only do you have two talented running backs, you have a very talented, as we've seen, Tyler Warren, tight end, senior leader that can get you some yards when you need it the most. So, yes, Penn State had some struggles here. Defensively was a little bit concerning as they let me see here. I'm pulling up the stats because I'm riding solo. So they gave up 409 total yards of offense, but USC gave up 518 with 220 in the air. Penn State walk away encouraged. Based off of the players that you have, your head coach is still, you know, head scratchingly making some difficult decisions. Walk away with your head held high. Because this was impressive. I don't care what Alex says. This was an impressive, impressive victory. So a few other scores that we should take a look at in the Big Ten slate. How about a classic from Purdue, Illinois? A 50-49 final score. Purdue blows it because they try to go for two at the end of the game. But the story here is that I believe Ryan Walters takes over play calling for both the offense and the defense in this game because Purdue had been so miserable. He's like, all right, I got to save my job. And it worked. It worked pretty well. The story here is that, Purdue comes back down in the fourth quarter. It was 34-20. And Ryan Brown, starting in place of Hudson Carr, had an incredible game. 18 of 26 for 297 yards and three touchdowns to will the team back into this game, and they come up just a little bit short. And I believe I saw a stat that Illinois beat Purdue at home for the first time since 2010 because Illinois fans rushed the field. This was a trophy game as well. I was like, Purdue's 1-5 and we're rushing the field and you're a ranked team. That's kind of weird. But seeing that stat, it makes a little bit more sense. Purdue showed out, and it still wasn't enough to overcome Illinois. Guys, I can't do it anymore with this Illinois team. I just can't. Because I was ready to dog. I've been dogging on them the whole time, and I will give credit to where credit is due. This season has, I think, bought Brett Bielema a few more years. Now, if the season bottoms out, which I don't think it will, do you have something cooking here in Illinois? Do you have them taking the spot of maybe a Wisconsin who has struggled and kind of being that team that's just solid all the way around? I mean, Illinois is 5-1. Like we look at that and we might say, okay, well, who have they played? Okay, well, they played Michigan this week. They beat Nebraska on the road. They beat a Kansas team that was ranked at the beginning of the year. Okay, Illinois's 5-1. It's not like that they're a bunch of schmucks. And I thought they were going to be 1-5 at this point in the year, but clearly, Bielema has done something to galvanize the team. And the play of Luke Altmyer has been incredible as well. This guy was bad a couple of years ago, and he has turned into a really solid player. His game stats this week, at least passing, were 20 of 34 for 379 yards and three touchdowns. And he was great. He was absolutely incredible. And this is the story for Illinois. Illinois could make some noise if they have Michigan at home this weekend. And then they go to Oregon, which that could be a very interesting game. And then they finish out the year, Minnesota at home, Michigan State at home. They travel to Rutgers. That Rutgers is lost. And then they go to Northwestern in the frozen tundra of Lake Michigan in the soccer stadium. But watch out. You want to talk about outside chances to make the Big Ten title game. I mean, it's ahead. They control their own destiny. Now it's going into Oregon and beating them, which is highly unlikely. But Illinois has just as good of a shot to make it to the Indianapolis as any team atop the conference right now. Will they do it? I don't know, but they control their own destiny. And what else could you want from this? If you're a Purdue fan, this season has been terrible, but I think you have to be encouraged at least a little bit with how they played on the road in this game. And maybe they'll salvage a couple of wins down the stretch. Maybe we've been talking too much about this game, but they host Purdue or they host Oregon. And Oregon is a top five team. And you know what happens at Purdue when top five teams come in for night games. But then they host Northwestern, they go to Ohio State, they host Penn State, and then they host or they go to Michigan State, who is a mystery, to say it nicely. And then they go to Indiana, who obviously has been really, really good this year. So last week we were thinking that Purdue was going to finish with one win. They might rattle off a couple more, but great game if you had a chance to watch it. And Illinois comes out on top. Okay, a little bit of rapid fire. The second or the third team that goes cross country and wins on the West Coast is Minnesota, beating a very, very bad UCLA team. It was a last second or just about a last second touchdown. 27 seconds left to go in the game. Max Brosmer finds Darius Taylor, and they take the lead. And I believe that Minnesota covers in this game as well. Guys, don't look now. Ethan, cover your ears. Minnesota's 4-3. This is their expectation in Minnesota right now. If they can get to a bowl game, if they can be kind of okay, that's going to save PJ Fleck's job. It's unfortunate. I mean, as a Minnesota fan, you would want something more than that. You would want more than mediocrity, but I mean, they're probably going to be, they play Maryland Illinois, Rutgers, Penn State, and Wisconsin, they're probably going to be bowl eligible. I mean, I see a win against Maryland. I see a win against potentially Rutgers. What that would get you to 6 wins. So if you're going to tell me that they're not going to get 2 more wins, I would find it hard that something would have to go very bad. And if they don't get 2 more wins, then yes, PJ Fleck will be fired. But I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to do it, and we're going to see PJ Fleck in Minnesota. UCLA, it's a rebuilding year. There's not much to say about you, but we'll keep moving. Iowa absolutely destroying Washington. Michigan fans and the Michigan coaching staff should be embarrassed. 40-16, and the story of this game was Caleb Johnson. He had 3 touchdowns, and he did just about anything that he wanted. 166 rushing yards in this game, and unbelievable. Unbelievable. Cade McNamara only passed for 108 yards with 2 touchdown passes. And I believe it was his first touchdown pass against a Power 5 team since 2021, I believe, when he was at Michigan. But I'll tell you this, either Michigan is real bad or this is a completely different Washington Huskies team that went to Iowa to play. Speechless. Speechless, really. Iowa's offense was able to do whatever the heck they wanted to against Washington. And yikes. Yikes is all I've got to say about that. I believe Washington's shooting themselves in the foot, still kind of reared its ugly head, because I believe Grady Gross missed a few more field goals as well. He was 1 for 2. With as long being a 35-yard field goal. This is the story of Washington. They were able to put it all together against Michigan, and Michigan didn't help themselves. They got a win at home, big win at home, but then if you can't keep that consistently, you're going to continue to lose games and lose games pretty terribly. So Iowa's doing Iowa things again. They're 4-2. Technically, I think they're still alive in the conference with one Big Ten loss to Ohio State. In a year with no divisions, is it possible that Iowa makes it back to Indianapolis? Iowa plays Michigan State on the road, Northwestern at home, Wisconsin at home. They travel to UCLA, and then they close out the year with Maryland on the road. Maryland stinks. And then Nebraska they host. We can't. We got to ban them. They got to be put on probation or something. We can't see Iowa in Indianapolis again to play like Oregon or something like that. But we just can't have it. Last but not least, Rutgers bad, and that hurts my heart. Wisconsin drops 42 points on Rutgers in their own house, and Wisconsin. You want to talk about the dairy raid, but what's Wisconsin's bread and butter since like 1902? It's been running the ball. How do you pronounce his name? Tawi Walker. Wow, this is going to be really bad. So Wisconsin fans, please do not blow me up in the comments. But Walker, we'll just go with that. Breakout game. Your senior running back has 198 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns. You give any running back that stat line, you're going to win the game the majority of the time. Ethan Kaliak-Manis stinks. He stinks. He stinks. We've been sold a bag. We've been sold some terrible goods here with this Rutgers team. They are bad, and we shouldn't have bought into the hype that maybe we created on our own, but yikes. Wisconsin was lost and had no identity, and they dropped 42 points on you. Okay, well, they beat up on Purdue, but that's not that impressive. But then, I mean, that was 2 weeks removed from blowing a huge lead at USC. But don't look now. Wisconsin's 4-2. They could potentially have a shot, potentially, based off of their schedule. And that was the second-to-last game, but the last game that we're going to talk about was the game that was played first in the conference, and that was Northwestern traveling to Maryland at 30 on Friday, where they win 37-10. Northwestern just does what they always do. And they're like a meddling middle of the pack Big Ten team, and they figure out and they win some games that it's like maybe you wouldn't expect them to. You're a little bit surprised that they go on the road and beat a Maryland team. But guys, it's time. If you're a Terrapins fan, it is time to move on from Loxley. You had your best shot last year, Tagovailoa. You don't do it. I think you finished 6th. Where are you going? What are you doing? What direction do you want to be in? Because bowl eligibility is still on the table, but it's very much not likely at all. Their final schedule of the year, USC travels to Maryland. Maryland then goes to Minnesota. Maryland goes to Oregon. Maryland hosts Rutgers. And then they close out the year, Iowa at home. And then they go to Penn State, Happy Valley, in a somewhat rivalry game. Do you see it? Do you see 3 more wins for Maryland? I don't. I don't hear. I'm not confident in any of these games. At maybe Rutgers, maybe. That's it. I'm not confident in any of this. So if you don't get to bowl eligibility, which doesn't mean anything in today's day and age of college football, especially in the Big Ten, you got to move on. You got to move on because your ceiling is 6-6. You had all the pieces. You had all the pieces and you couldn't do anything. What else do you want? What else can you do? Move on from Loxley if that's the case, if you do not get to bowl eligibility. But that was your Big Ten slate from this past week. Maybe we spent a little bit too much time, but I'm riding solo and I don't really care. But everybody, we know why you listen. We know why you jump on every week. It's the picks. I think we've hit a bit of a rough patch. I know I have, at least, and Alex is the keeper of the picks, and he will have those final numbers for you. I wish I had them, but I don't because I'm embarrassed of them, so you're not going to get them from me. But we've got a huge slate of games this week, and we're going to go through the picks as well, and we're going to go just about in order of time. So if you're looking for some picks, this is what we got for you. So we're going it over starting Friday, October 18th. Everybody's least favorite place to play in the Big Ten when you are a top 5 team is at Ross-Ade Stadium in West Lafayette, Purdue, or West Lafayette, Indiana. Purdue hosts Oregon coming off of a big victory. And I was just thinking about this. So since 2018, Purdue has had 3 home top 5 or top 3 victories. Like, look at those stats. Like, we hark on all these big time coaches for not winning the big game against the AP top 5. Purdue has done it 3 times since 2018. They beat Ohio State, they beat Michigan State, and they beat Iowa. All at home. All in the top 3, which is nuts. How do they do that? So the line we have for this game is Oregon minus 28.5. I said I was done picking Purdue, but there's a potential I could be at this game. I said I was done picking Purdue. I'm buying into the hype. That's the fun of college football. You got to buy into the hype, and it's like, well, it's not fun when you're picking spreads and games. Okay, that's fine, but that if the Purdue team that showed up against Illinois on the road, I might add to you, Oregon at 28.5 points traveling to Purdue. I don't see it. I'm going to take Purdue in this situation. They're going to cover that 28.5 point spread, even if they lose by 21 and get schlacked. They still cover this. It just seems too good to be true for me. But big game. I think it's our big noon kickoff. Nebraska travels to number 16, Indiana, who has started 6-0. Nebraska still sneakily 5-1 as well. This kicks off at noon, and Indiana is a 6.5 point favorite. This is Indiana's toughest test to date. You get it at home. You're changing the culture. Kignetti has been a revelation for this team. However, this is where the schedule gets tough. This is where we're going to see what this Indiana team is made of. And I think Nebraska is going to play them tough. Against better judgment, I think I'm going to take Nebraska in this situation. I think this is going to be a really close game. I think the talent will be much more comparable in this game than any of the games that Indiana has played in. And I think this sneakily might be the best game on the Big Ten slate this week. I think it's going to be really exciting, and we should be glued to our TVs at noon. So I'm going to take Nebraska. I'm going to take Nebraska plus the points, and we're going to see how it goes. And you're going to get to watch an incredible football game. So Wisconsin travels to Northwestern in two teams that have seemingly figured some things out. It's going to be on Lake Michigan. It's going to be cold, and Wisconsin is a 7-point favorite. Oh man, this is a game I probably would stay away from. Maybe call the number, because I think these two teams are a little, I don't want to say a lot more similar, but with the way Wisconsin has played and just kind of like head scratchingly lost games that you didn't think they were going to lose, and Northwestern kind of just being Northwestern, this is a difficult game to read. I'm going to take Wisconsin, reluctantly, and it feels gross coming out of my mouth. And I don't know why, but I think Wisconsin will be able to run the ball effectively, get back to their roots. This might be a push scenario. Oh boy, but I think Wisconsin could win this game by 10 as well. So I'm going to take Wisconsin. I'm not going to give any more analysis with it because yikes. I want to throw up in my mouth. Another game at noon kick. It's going to be like 9 in the morning for all of our West Coast UCLA fans. Shout out you guys. I know that in the first year of this conference, in the first year of potentially you guys listening to this podcast, we've only said bad things about UCLA, but it's deserved. UCLA travels to Rutgers, to New Jersey, where Rutgers is a 4.5-point spread. I'm not picking UCLA. I just refuse. I can't do it. And if Rutgers loses to UCLA, cancel the season. You have my full permission to do so. So, yes, Rutgers covers the 4.5-point spread in battle of maybe two of the worst Big Ten teams in the conference, potentially. Okay, so big game, only fully ranked matchup in the conference this week. Number 24, Michigan, coming off of a bye week, travels to number 22, Illinois, where they are celebrating the Red Grange game. Red Grange, 6-touchdown game against Michigan. I think it's like the 100th year anniversary or something like that. And Illinois is wearing like special throwback jerseys. They're kind of ugly, but kind of cool at the same time. Michigan is a 3.5-point favorite. That spread has flipped quite a bit since the coming weeks. I'm a Michigan slappy. Everybody knows it, and I try not to be, but I think Michigan comes off the bye with the advantage of, okay, now Michigan will be running a semi competent offense with a semi competent quarterback. So what are you going to get? There's not much on film. And Illinois just came off of a game where it's a little concerning that you went to overtime against a one-win Purdue team. This is going to be a really good game. I think it's going to be really close. And I think this is a desperation spot for Michigan. If Michigan loses this game, I mean, their season is done because there'll be 4-3. You'll get a couple more wins. Maybe you'll finish with 7, 8 wins, maybe. But this is a game that Michigan has to have. And I think they pull it off because they will. The key here will be getting their defense off of the field more than in any game. And if you can do that, Michigan's defense has shown, albeit their struggles, has shown that they can keep teams at bay when they aren't tired because they do not have the depth. So Khalil Mullings, Donovan Edwards, and a quarterback that can pass the ball 10 yards down the field. I think they cover that spread, maybe. I'm more confident now coming out of the bye than I was going into it, just because of how things have played out. So I think Michigan covers this spread, and I think they win the game by more than 4. So maybe 7. Who knows? We'll see what happens. All right. 4 o'clock kick. USC travels to Maryland, where USC is a 7-point favorite. Maryland stinks. USC minus 7. Take it. That might be my super lock. Might be my super lock. If I didn't have to look at Iowa, Michigan State, which is the nightcap in your like NBC Big Ten Saturday night game, which is kind of a dud. But Iowa travels to Michigan State. Iowa's defense and a electric but turnover prone quarterback. Bad recipe. And I think Iowa will be able to control the line of scrimmage. They'll be able to control the pace of play in this game, despite the talents of Aiden Childs on the other side of the ball. The story will be for Michigan State from here on out, can they limit the turnovers? And if they can limit the turnovers, they can be a team that can make or that can cause some problems for their opposition. But I think with Iowa's defense being as good as it ever has been, I don't think that happens tonight or on Saturday night. So I believe Iowa covers their spread. I think they win this game by a touchdown. And if I had to have a second super lock, which I'm not gonna, it would be this one. But that's our picks. That's it, everybody. And we're 41 minutes into this, and we're riding solo. Just want to say thank you so much for listening to us every week. Thank you for sticking with me and trying to keep the energy as high as possible and give you the best insight that I can. Who knows? Maybe Ethan's going to be riding solo at some point in the next couple of weeks. But we promise that we don't hate each other. We're just busy people, and we have to record at weird times. And we do realize that all of us being on the pod at the same time makes for better listening. We get that. We understand. And we want it too. So thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for riding solo with me today. And hopefully you get to enjoy some Big Ten football this weekend until the end of the year, where we crown a Big Ten champion and potentially, maybe hopefully, a national champion as well. So guys, thank you so much for listening. We love you. Peace.